I see how Latin rock and roll music is going in this country, and not just Latin rock and roll music, Latin music in general. I just want to play for my people, to be honest, and I need to grow with Latino rock and rollers for sure, for sure.
Hey, this is Dennis Black for the Black and Wyatt Records podcast. This time around, sculptor and filmmaker Mike McCarthy is talking with guitarist and vocalist Javi Arcega as he records his second LP release on Black and Wyatt Records with his band Lost Psychosis. Javi talks about Latino culture and his influences growing up in Memphis. Here's a cut called Glittered Eyes from his first Black and Wyatt release.
Hey everybody, this is the Black and White Podcast. I'm Mike McCarthy, and we're talking to Javi Arcega.
Hola, hola.
I got your last name right.
You got it.
I never pronounced your last name before just 5 minutes ago.
You got it. Excellent.
Well, you explained it to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
So that's good. I've only known you in the first name world, even though I've seen you play Black and White, put your record out, hung out with you and so forth, and welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Trying to figure this thing out as we go along. You're our third guest. Tell me a little bit about your upbringing and where you're from. What planet did you come from?
I come from a planet called Chilangolandia, Mexico City. And I've been in the States ever since I was a little boy.
How old?
Ever since I was about six. I've been listening to music ever since I was in Mexico and coming over here, listening to newer stuff. I remember first coming to the States and hearing new music here. I was just like, wow, there's just so much going on here, you know?
So that would have been
97.
97.
Mm-hmm.
And how old were you?
I was about six.
Oh, wow. With the corporatization of everything, how could you hear what was interesting? Was your mom and dad into real stuff, underground stuff?
Well, I think that my mom was going through a bit of a downer, and so I got to hear her good, her, you know, her bring the magic stuff, you know, her listening to the magic stuff. So
I don't know what you mean.
Well, my mom was homesick, and I got to discover a lot of South American music because Mexican people don't just listen to music from Mexico. We listen to South American music, Cuban music. So I got to discover a lot of a lot of, you know, a lot of romantic stuff, a lot of newer rock and roll, or the new wave of rock and roll in the 90s that my parents were getting into. Also, my parents used to drive a lot late at night. We would travel across the country, and I would hear, you know, all night, I would hear so much music. So much music that my dad was, you know, showing me, you know.
Were they musical people?
Oh, yeah, definitely musical people. They don't play music, but they were very, very musical people, always having music around, always playing music, always showing me about music. So in that sense, for sure, they were musical people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what made you want to, like, pick up the guitar?
I remember having, ever since I was a kid, just, I don't know, something magical about it. When I was a kid, I would pick up a toy guitar and I would just start singing and rambling about whatever I would see. And then later on, as I became more conscious, I was brainwashed by the movie La Bamba with Blue Diamond Phillips. So I was brainwashed with that movie into becoming a musician. You know, I wanted to be like Richie. I wanted to have Donna. You know, I wanted to drive the car, you know.
So are you saying that La Bamba was key in that all-encompassing rockabilly godhood of, like...
I definitely think so. It yeah. is a bit of a cheesy influence, but it's glorious. It's a glorious yeah. enough, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So does that also lead back to Buddy Holly story?
Mm-hmm. It does later on in my life, for sure.
Right, mm-hmm. right. Because you didn't have a lot of influences from, well, we're talking about Hollywood movies that were maybe, well, at least there's a chance for you to look at something that has someone that looks like you playing the role of a rock and roller.
Mm-hmm.
So that's good.
I mean, even later on, Hollywood movies like Desperado, yeah. you know, they would have a lot of Latino bands in their soundtrack. They had Tito and Tarantula, and yeah. he used to play with a lot of LA bands back in the day, back in the 80s. A lot of, you know, played with people from Slash Records. So, mm-hmm. you know, later on, I would realize that a lot of music that I heard when I was younger, you know, actually has a lot of punk rock roots from the right. 80s, you know?
So when you're going through puberty or becoming a teenager, that's when you got into punk rock?
Oh, definitely.
Or were you before? Did you know about it beforehand?
Well, it was, you know, when I was a kid, you know, you have your classic rock phase because you're discovering. It's the early 2000s for me. And as soon as you hear the Ramones, it's over. You know, mm-hmm. everything else is just doesn't sound the same.
So there was a form of music that you were into that you had to reject.
Absolutely. After hearing...
So what were you listening to that you rejected?
I think like all the classic rock stuff.
Right? Like mm-hmm. hair metal on back?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All of that stuff.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, your parents going, Javi, you really don't need to be listening to...
It was going too fast for them. It was, right. you know...
but for me, getting into punk made me not have to feel so bad about not being able to play the guitar the way that I thought I was supposed to play it. That made me like punk rock better. But some people don't play guitar, don't join bands. They just listen to punk rock. Mm-hmm. They don't feel the need to join a band. But it almost seems like when you get into punk, you're supposed to play punk.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like that's the calling, mm-hmm. you know? And it was true of you.
For sure, for sure.
How many bands were you in, or how did you start?
A few people I knew growing up would play music, and I would just hear them, and they would try to get me into this and that. And it was definitely people from my school.
Where was this?
This was in Kingsbury High School.
Okay.
Over here in Nutbush. And, we, within the group of the Latino kids, we would all get together and wanted to start a band. And I remember it was like six people playing guitar, trying to play like the same song. Everybody wanted to play guitar.
Who was in charge?
Yeah, who was in charge?
You were in charge?
I was, I wanted to be in charge for sure. But, you know... It turned out, you know, later on in life, a lot of my friends are still playing music, different kinds of music. Even that crowd of people that I started playing music with, now they're playing in Mexican bands. You know, now they're playing and picking up gigs here and there, you know.
So in Memphis.
Mm-hmm.
So where would you go in Memphis to hear a Mexican band?
So there was a restaurant where they would have a cover band that is still playing to this day called Don Ramon. And they've been playing for a long time. Right when they were in a few years in, we would open up for them.
Which version of you?
Me and my high school buddies.
Okay.
We would open up for them. We were the Ugly Ducklings. You like that?
Yeah, I
like Los
that.
Patitos Feos. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. A big fan of fairy tales, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
When you said Kingsbury in Memphis, I wasn't expecting that. I was expecting you to say that, oh, well, I grew up on the West Coast, or my parents were moving here and there, and then I wound up in Memphis right before Los Psicosis or something. But you've been here for a long time.
I've been here since eighth grade, since ninth grade. And before that, I lived in Austin, Texas, and there was a ton of music there. So mm-hmm. that was the big idea was coming up there. I remember during Halloween, we would go downtown. We would walk all over downtown during Halloween. You would see a ton of bands play outside. And, you know, I was a kid. I was enjoying it. And that was like a big, big, big awakening for me to start playing. And I had seen my uncle took me to my first show when I was 13, right before I moved over here. My first band I saw was Tears for Fears. And that was amazing. That, you know, mm-hmm. that was a big changer. I didn't know about music. I didn't know about them. Mm-hmm. And so it was like, that was his band, you know. It was a really good experience.
Well, South By is going on right now. So did you participate in that ever?
I did about 11 years ago. Mm. We did a show there and played like at a church.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never seen that many people in my life.
Mm. But did it lead to any?
It didn't lead much.
Yeah.
It didn't lead much. It was just somebody just had a little spot for us, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think... when I was younger, it was a big, people liked it because we were young. We were like underage.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But so. And your energy, I'm sure. When you play, I like your energy when you play. It's coming from some place real.
For sure. I have to feel alive. You
so
know?
If you weren't accepted, then maybe you were too real. Mm-hmm. But, okay, so then what happens after that? You get here, you move here, you go to high school here, and you're aware of Memphis music history, or how long does that take to formulate?
It was little by little. It was definitely because of punk rock music, little by little. And I remember picking up a record from Spin Street. It was the Cramps' first record, Songs the Lord Taught Us. And I turned the record around, and I saw where the album was recorded. Mm-hmm. And it said Madison Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I need to go to this Sam Phillips place. You know, I was a kid. I didn't know anything about Sam Phillips.
Right.
And I remember I took a MATA bus there. I walked all the way to Sam Phillips. And I couldn't believe that I lived in the same town where this first Cramps record was recorded.
Right.
So that was a big awakening in my senior year. And I was like, I think I know what I want to do. Also, I was fortunate enough to have some mentor in high school. We had Kirk Whalum come to my school because I was doing audio engineering at the Votec. And Kirk Whalum was a good friend of my audio engineer teacher. For a whole year, he would come and talk to us. And he was a mentor for me because I asked him a bunch of questions because I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do with my life. So I asked Kirk Whalum, Kirk, should I be a musician? What do you think? And Kirk gave me a very Jesus answer. And he said, yes. He said, you're going to have the greatest time. He's like, you know, if you're so passionate about it. But he was like, always keep God, you know, always keep God with you. I guess he didn't want me to go through a rough path, you know, because he knew that I was all about that punk rock. But anyways, I still see Kirk Whalum to this day. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you remember me? He's like, yeah, I remember you. And he starts talking to me in Spanish because he knows Spanish now.
No kidding. He showed up. He was a big supporter of the Mid-South Coliseum and performed there and really supported what we were doing. God, this was back in 2015 when we had the Roundhouse Revival.
Well, that makes me happy. He's a grassroots kind of person. For him to go to a high school, a low-funded high school, and talk to the kids and influence me like that was amazing. I mean, I just... And he still remembers me. He's still so down to earth to keep in touch.
Well, so then what happens after high school?
I start playing music with friends, and I start going around town and meeting people, and people are taking... I'm underage, and I'm going to the Buccaneer. People are sneaking me in there, this and that, and I start... You know, seeing this world.
I got snuck into the Buccaneer, and I was probably in my 40s.
Wow.
Yeah.
So yeah, I was snuck in there a lot, and I started knowing the circle of people who liked the same kind of music I did. And
the Buccaneer is the place you don't want to tell Kirk Whalum about.
But yeah, that was it. That was around that area, all Madison Avenue, there were the rock and roll spots.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure before my time, but you know, just fresh out of high school, Madison Avenue was my rock and roll education.
I guess you first popped up in my Facebook feed, and I'm like, okay, who's this guy? And he seems like he's got this knowledge or attitude, or where's he from, and what kind of music is he playing? And I remember being sort of like intrigued by who you were at the time, but this was maybe a couple years before I even saw you play or talk to you or anything. And it's, to me, it's uncanny, and it's kind of special that you would invoke Madison Avenue, you know, like to know. I mean, yeah, the Buccaneers setting over there, but then there was the antenna and the folklore, the Piggly Wiggly, and all the Decadence Manor, and all the clothing stores that were on Madison Avenue and stuff. Just that, it's like such a punk rock street.
Definitely.
And you knew about all that.
Yeah, I ended up living half of my life, or most of my life, in that area before I knew it. You know, now that I look back, it's like I've spent most of my life in Madison Avenue now.
Mm-hmm. What do you think of it now?
it's going a different route, you know.
P&H is gone.
Yeah, it's going, you know, it's going to a Nashville kind of taste, but you know, the essence will always be there, you know, for sure.
I don't know. It just seems like it's the place where ideas, music happens. Of course, Murphy's still there. Things always come along. New things come along.
Yeah, new things come along. And also, I feel like...
Lamplighter's still there.
There's between the different places of town, you hear different kinds of music, too. There are different kind of music scenes. You know, U of M, you would hear a different kind of music scene in that area.
Did you go to U of M?
No, I did not go to U of M. Yeah. Downtown, you know, North Mississippi.
Do you get around all these places? You actually check out the music in certain spots?
I think I've, for sure. I've definitely tried to check out every different spot. And I think it's my job as a Memphis musician to, like, you know, not just do it because I have to, because I'm a Memphian, you know, I enjoy the essence of downtown, the essence of Madison Avenue.
And you play with some old school guys.
Yeah, like for sure.
Ross Johnson. And yeah. You want to talk about that a little bit? How did that all come together? How'd you meet Ross?
I love Ross and all of Ross's people.
Ross's people.
Ross's gang. Because I remember when I was, before I even met them, that I idolized them, you know, because just because these people were still here, you know, and just to know that they have great records and they are normal people here who play all the time, you know, places around town all the time. It's a good down to earth feeling, you know.
How did the formation of your band Low Psychosis happen with the Memphis influence and knowing these folks that you know, like the Clits and Ross, and how did that kind of create this idea for what Low Psychosis would become?
The most essential punk rock Memphis influence, for sure, as in the Clits, as in, you know, early Tav and Alex's music, over other punk rock influences from the West Coast or from the East Coast. You know, that's definitely a big essence of mine. All of my bandmates have always been my closest friends for the most part. So we listen to records a lot. I definitely show them the stuff, the deep Mexican music cuts, you know.
And they bring their own influences to it.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Now, are you talking about, you're still in Low Psychosis. And you're, I guess, the quote-unquote band leader or the songwriter.
For sure.
You write all the songs in Low Psychosis.
For sure. And you know, there was a point in my life where after this record came out, after the pandemic happened, I was just like, should I really? I've had this group for such a long time with so many different people. I was telling myself, is it really essential for me to keep this name and keep it going? And honestly, the album reviews made me keep this band going, because the album reviews were, you know, something I would have never imagined.
From the Black and Wyatt release. Well, let's play a cut off of this. If you were going to play a cut right now, what would which one would it be?
I would love Neptune 120. Okay. For sure. It's a song that I really don't play anymore, but this is definitely the essence of this record. I'm going to spend
we'll be right back. Okay. All right. And we're back. All right. That was Neptune 120. That was off the Black and Wyatt release of Los Psicosis. Rock and Roll Dreams is the name of the record. COVID did slow this thing up a little bit, but it came out.
It came out.
Is there stuff inside the record, or is it just like...
There is just a 45 RPM record in there.
Does it play at 45?
It plays at 45.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Well, that's like my fingers like Saturn. It plays at 45.
I love that.
Mm-hmm. For increased fidelity, so I've been told.
Increased fidelity.
I'm not sure I have the system to prove it, but Dennis says, yes, it's true. Where's Los Psicosis these days? What's going on?
So we are halfway through a record.
This would be a second release?
Second release, yeah. Mm-hmm. We started recording a little bit over a year and a half ago. So okay. we did a session at Harry's place at Five and Dime, and then we did another session at Sun Studio, and we are almost there. After recording those songs, I was like, okay, I need to go back and write some more. Writing right away and then going to the studio right away so it could be as fresh a sound as it can be. I don't want it to be something repetitive that I've been playing for a while, mm-hmm. and then I record it again, then I hear it again. I want it to be fresh off the pen, you know?
So the band rehearses it, and then you get down the first or second take.
Yeah, we rehearse it like crazy, and then we go record it. Mm-hmm.
Do you even get a chance to play it live?
Yeah, we play it live for sure. Okay. Yeah, we've been playing most of these songs live, but we're changing it up a little bit, you know?
So when you write these songs, you said you've been recording for a year and a half. Mm-hmm. You're in no particular rush.
Now that I look at it, I'm like, oh my God, I've been working on this record for almost 2.5, almost 3 years. I'm like,
not that
wow.
That's not a bad thing. I'm just saying you're consciously taking your time with this.
I am, and a few times I feel like I need a rush. I need to, you know, keep mm-hmm. it going. And okay. I'm just like, 3 years, wow, that's kind of a long time.
In your lifetime, have you thought about how many Los Psicosis records there need to be to tell the things that are inside your head?
Depends how life goes, right?
Right.
You know,
I mean, you've got a kid, you got life going on, you mm-hmm. got work to do and so yeah, forth. So, yeah.
I mean, you know, for all I know, the other one will knock it out, you know, real quick. Or
what's a large influence on you as far as your Memphis lifestyle? That is it observation of other people? Are there political things or social things in your mind? What when you're singing about things and the style that you sing about them, which I guess could be called. It's rock and roll, but it could be Americana or I don't know what it could be called anymore. I don't know if any of these tags make sense anymore. In other words, does the new record have a theme? Are you trying to get something off your chest or what is it?
I see how Latin rock and roll music is going in this country, and not just Latin rock and roll music, Latin music in general. I just want to play for my people, to be honest, and I need to grow with Latino rock and rollers, for sure.
You mean people in other places?
People in other places. Yeah. And I definitely know and feel that Memphis will have that in the future. And a few more years, you know, there'll be a handful of Latino rock and rollers here too.
Well, that's what I was about.
We're a little slow here. I mean, okay. it's just things are work a little bit different, but...
Are you the Latino rock and roller in Memphis?
I know that I'm probably not the only one.
Okay. All right.
Know, there's probably some high schoolers who are going to pop up here in a little bit, you know.
They need to know about you.
I need to get to them.
You need to go to their VOTEC.
I need to go to their church.
Faith plays a hand in this. Is it Catholic faith? Is it?
No, I think we're getting over that.
Are you really? I think everyone's getting over it. But still, it's part of your heritage, part of your makeup, part of your background. But who knows what's going on with kids? I mean, I don't even know if kids are listening to rock and roll or playing rock and roll is a whole other thing. Listening to it is easy enough, I suppose. But playing is a whole
kids
other thing.
Kids are listening to good stuff.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, if you say
they
so.
They got their hands on it, for sure.
What kind of guitars do you play?
I play Gretsch guitars.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And what do you use pedals? What kind of amps? What?
Fender amps.
Uh-huh.
Gretsch guitar. Little, whatever kind of pedal. Just like a reverb. Just barely
and
reverb.
And you play hollow body guitar?
I play hollow body guitar, yeah. For sure. Mm-hmm. But... I'm only singing right now in Los Psicosis. I have my friends play guitar right now.
But I don't know. Why would you do that?
I mean...
I've never seen you not hold a guitar in your hands.
I've been just singing because I'm fortunate enough to have somebody to play guitar for me. And, you know...
Yeah.
I get to move around more and be more conscious of my voice for sure.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
For sure.
Like
for sure.
In a recording environment.
Yeah. Or live environment for sure.
When you're recording at Sun, there's really, do you have a producer? You're the producer. You're the...
For the most part, besides sound engineer, I definitely do most of the producing.
Mm-hmm. Who's engineering at Sun now?
Daniel Crockett.
And so is he aggressive and like telling you, do you guys have a thing? Or you're like, here's what I want? Or
I like aggressive.
Yeah.
Sure. I like aggressive.
You want somebody to prove their point as to how to mic something or tell you how a mix goes or whatever?
I don't want some, I love somebody telling me what to do, you know?
Ah.
Yeah. Well, I don't like going into a studio and somebody just hitting record and just chilling.
Sure.
Yeah.
And Harry's like that as well at Five and Dime?
I think we were like running late. And so we were kind of just like, we were kind of over it at that time.
This is the new stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. So did you record the new stuff like in one block, several songs at Harry's, then you moved to Sun and did several songs? You didn't go back and forth, or you didn't use one studio to mix something that you recorded at another studio?
I just wanted to do it more at Sun because I think availability. Mm-hmm. And so, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Have you ever tried to get into Sam Phillips?
I want to so bad. I would love that. Are you kidding me?
Do you know Bomar?
Yeah. Yeah.
You should hit him up.
I should hit him up. I'll ask Tav to hit up Dewey to give me a deal or something.
There's Scott showed me a master tape, analog tape of the Cramps had left, or somehow it had gotten recorded and left a recording of Mad Daddy that still resides at Sam Phillips.
Well, you know, I don't know if this is off record or not, but I'm actually working on I started working on a documentary on Songs the Lord Taught Us.
Really?
During the pandemic. I started interviewing Marsha and Amy and Ross about what was going on around that time.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I think that stuff needs to be documented. I feel like there might be a few people who are like, you don't need to do that. Or I don't know. I asked around if, it was a good idea to document people's interviews about what happened when Songs the Lord Taught Us, because Ross was in the studio when that happened. So mm-hmm.
Last year I wrote a screenplay with the assistance of Casey Black called Flies on Harbor, because of the things that Ross told me about the Cramps being here and staying on Harbor Avenue with Chilton's parents in lieu of any other place they could stay. They could stay there for free.
Mm-hmm.
And they had recorded at Ardent for Gravest Hits, and they came back for Sam Phillips for Songs the Lord Taught Us. And the joke was, guy here in town named Robert McClellan told Chilton, he's like, he should call his record like Flies on Harbert instead of Flies on Sherbert, because that's where they were all hanging out. And just the idea of the Cramps living with Chilton's parents to me was like some kind of 70s sitcom idea. It had to be written. It'll never be made. But it had to be written.
So also, they were staying with Alex's girlfriend,
Lisa.
Lisa.
Yeah.
And she lived the exact apartment that I'm staying at right now.
On Madison?
On Madison Avenue. So I can't believe that I live where the Cramps stayed at once.
Wait, you're living in Lisa Aldrich's apartment on Madison.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Wow. That's crazy. So you're next to Quick Check and across the street from Arden.
Mm-hmm. So definitely, definitely feel that Madison, you know.
Well, your apartment is in my screenplay.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. All right. Wow. All right. Well, so this new record, do you have a label for it?
I have a label for it. I'm kind of unsure about the title for it.
But you someone's going to put it out.
Definitely Dennis.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right.
So
this is news to me. I didn't know.
I send them a few of the tracks we recorded.
Dennis and Robert?
Yeah, I've sent them a few demos.
Okay, because I thought that we had talked about a follow-up. What's that, Dennis?
We're anxiously awaiting. Mm-hmm.
The finish of how many songs do you have left to go?
I have to record, I believe, 4 or 5.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
For, and like 10-song record or?
It's like a 10 or 11-song record.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, before I get you out of here, I kind of want to go back and figure in some of your influences. I know you brought some stuff to play.
Yeah.
And earlier key influences in your life or even some recent things that, mm-hmm. that you're being influenced by. What do you want to play?
I think the first thing I want to play is one of the most influential things ever for me, the song Cool Drink of Water by Tommy Johnson. And that song was recorded here in Memphis. It was recorded on Front Street. It used to be an RCA studio there. Now it's some sort of hall. But anyways, Tommy Johnson, Cool Drink of Blues, and how influential it was to Howling Wolf and beyond. Mm. You know,
what year is this from?
This is, I believe, 1922. I believe 1922. Tommy Johnson, Cool Drink of Water.
I thought, and she gave me gasoline. I didn't pull bottom, gave me gasoline. I thought, and she gave me gasoline. Lord, good Lordy, Lord. Right, Lord, I want to, but I ever get back home. Try, Lord, that I ever get back home, Lord, good Lordy, Lord. I went to the devil, looked up on the bow. I had a gun, I love it is the bomb, train been gone. He's dodging your peril, blown his smoke on you. He's dodging your loaded smoke on you, Lord, good Lordy, Lord. Lord, I had a conductor, could I ride a blind? You won't know if you're a good man riding blind. Son, buy your ticket, buy your. Caught it training, none of mine. Son, buy your ticket, training, none of mine. Son, buy your ticket, caught it training, none of mine.
Why do you like that? Why is it appealing to you?
It is spooky. It is spooky. It's like, it is so obscure. I feel like I'm hanging out in the grass, you know, in the cotton fields in Mississippi, 1928, you know, mm-hmm. Prohibition time, you know. It still speaks to this day for sure, you know, that the haunt, you know.
But it's obscure and that appeals to you also.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely, it's like pre-goth, you know.
You know. What is goth anyway?
We were listening to The Doors before you got here, so I think they were the first band they were quoted to be goth. I love, it's really funny. You'll hear, they got great music, and then out of nowhere, it's like Indian writing. It's ghosts, you know. The young child's eggshell mind.
Bam. Bam. Yeah. And then he drops to the floor.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because nobody wants to go to Vietnam. But are you going to have some of that on the new Low Psychosis record?
Some poetry?
Just drop dead poetry about children with eggshell minds?
Well, now that you mention it, I was definitely, I was thinking about doing like an experimental track.
Wow.
If my bandmates are okay with it. Maybe I'll just like hijack the studio and won't let them know.
I was going to say, do it when they're not there.
Yeah, yeah. For sure. Okay. So my sister is Muslim and her husband's from Palestine. And so I've been really, you know, I've been really moved by everything that it's been going on. Mm-hmm. So I was thinking about doing some little poetry in Arabic, you know, because my sister, you know, I have a diverse family. Yeah. You know?
What's another influence you want to play?
I want to play Los Psychos. They are a band from Peru. And we covered one of their songs on Rock and Roll Dreams. We covered Ana. Los Psychos performs and recorded in 1965. I believe that the cover of Ana is actually a cover of Arthur Alexander's Anna.
Okay.
Or they probably heard the Beatles' version.
Right.
And they just probably recycled the song. But I want to play a song by Los Psychos, which was a band from Peru from 1965. They only recorded 12 tracks. And this is the last track they recorded. And it's called El Entierro de los Gatos. And it means the cat burial.
Oh, yeah.
You like that?
Yeah. Can you speak to that a little
bit
more?
I can speak to that. just
well, it inspired your band name, right?
Yeah. Yep. I'm glad you brought that up. There's only been a handful of people that capture that know that. One of them was Jared from Black Lips. Mm. We played with the Black Lips a couple years ago at Growlers. And he actually knows the band members of Los Psychos. And he visits one of them, and he's played with them before. And
they're still alive.
They're still alive. One of them worked in NASA. Mm-hmm. So they lived an extraordinary life. And they're, most of them, except for one, is still alive. And they live in Washington, and they still perform. He recognized that. He said, "You got that from the band Los Psychos." And I was like, yeah. Yeah, it's like, you know.
I do recall reading interviews in Psychotronic magazine about the extent that the British invasion had into South America, mm-hmm. where you had a lot of mop top sort of looking Latinos that were trying to recreate the energy that the Beatles and the Stones mm-hmm. had. Is that where we're going here with
this?
Oh,
yeah, for sure. I mean, I can't imagine that there was a music scene as big as there was in huge cities here in the US, but in South America, in Peru and Mexico, in Colombia, Argentina, there was huge music scenes that, you know, a lot of people never know about because they are not as well known as what was going on here in, you know, in Europe.
But these bands produced actual vinyl records and they're probably all down there, right?
Oh, yeah.
So have you ever been down there to go back or to explore?
Oh, no.
They don't want you down there.
Oh, no.
No. Go down there looking for some records and never come back?
I buy a lot of records from Venezuela because it helps people in Venezuela out because they have an economic crisis. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of people in Venezuela selling records.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So you have a large collection of these things.
Yeah. I think I only go to record stores looking for Latino records for sure. Everything else I can pretty much buy online.
Do you have a DJ slot at a local radio station?
I actually, was invited, to go to host some with a friend, WYXR.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What else you want to play?
I want to play a band called Caifanes, and they are from Mexico. They are the biggest band that has come out of Mexico. I was fortunate enough to see them in Nashville last year. And
it's a younger band, a newer band.
They're from the 80s. They're from the late 80s. They played in Nashville, and before they performed, I told myself, I am going to get an autograph. I am going to get an autograph, and I did it. Oh, I gave them a poster from the record.
Okay.
And I got it autographed, and I had the best experience ever.
You should be opening for those guys.
Oh, they don't. I asked their contact people, but they ignored me, you know.
Oh. Well, you've been ignored by the best. All right, so what are we going to hear?
It's called Cuéntame Tu Vida by Los Caifanes. It's from the first record from 1988.
Para cada uno de los salones.
it's definitely close to my favorite record. I mean, it's just so early, 1988, and it just, that song just kind of speaks for the record itself.
In what way?
It's melancholic. There's a lot of movement going on, consciously.
Okay.
Consciously.
That's the kind of band that you would drive to see.
Yeah, that's the kind of band you would drive to see for sure. And they are a band that broke up, that said they would never get together again. And 20 years later, they got back together. Everything in Mexico has to be a dance song. People dance. It's like a sport, you know, like everybody dances. Everybody, you know, whatever kind of music you listen to, just you're still going to dance. So they had to do like a single, like a dance song, you know, and they did it their way. I finally want to hear one of my a great influence, the Gun Club, and this record is Death Party. It's their third record, and it's held a really special. It's an EP, but it holds a very special memory for me for sure.
What year did that come out?
This came out, I believe, 1984.
Okay, Gun Club is sort of one of those bands that's bulletproof, right?
Yeah, they played at the Antenna. They definitely have a big Memphis connection.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, what's the name of the song?
The song is called The Light of the World. Play it for me.
I don't even want to go through this. Tell him to come in here because he...
I thought I heard you say, thought you said you missed me, but you only missed me when I was gone. I thought I heard you say, they've done. Yes, I believe they would. May I console you? But I did you no wrong. That's not like me. I did you no wrong. So don't put it all on me. And you are not the light of the world. Put your shine on me. No, you're not the light of the world. Put your shine on me. No, you're not the light of the world now. No, you're not the light of the world now. I heard you walk. I let the blacks get all bad. To hurt me, and yes, it's sad. Have it settled the score. I thought I heard you walk. Up the fire escape last night. And yes, in the deep of the night, I wish you were back. But I did you know wrong. That's not like me. I did you know wrong. So don't put it all on me. And you are not the light of the world. Put your shine.
Played with people that were in other bands that you loved? Like, has there been some intersections at times?
For Gun Club, Jim Duckworth.
Yeah.
I played with him for a few years.
Is this before Los Psicosis?
This was during Los Psicosis' first record.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And that was a big influence, asking a bunch of questions about what was going on back in the day, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he goes back to the Tafalco days. And
he goes back to the Tafalco days.
Panther burns and so forth. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sure he doesn't want to talk about it, but
oh, yeah. No matter how much you talk about it, it still remains obscure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I saw Taff perform in London. Oh God, this was like 2005. And they were doing songs off Cordell Jackson's label, like Moon Records.
Awesome.
And they were so spot on. He had the best people playing with him.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it was mostly a makeup of Italians or European band members. But I was gobsmacked at how authentic they sounded, like the Memphis past. And that really impressed me.
Taff arranges music very well too. He mm-hmm. even he'll arrange WC Handy really well for you.
What do you mean?
You'll hear him make his versions of some songs, some Memphis mini songs, you know.
Sure.
He arranges it his own way and mm-hmm. it's great.
So have you played with Taff?
I have not played with Taff, but I'm glad to say I'm Taff's friend.
Tell me a little bit more about the new record. So you've got two-thirds of it recorded.
Yeah, I have two-thirds of it recorded. There is a huge doo-wop influence in here. I'm not talking about I straight up go, wah, 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 wah. But there is a big doo-wop influence because, okay. I don't know, it just... I would say it would go with like East LA doo-wop music or something like that, or right. oldies, you know.
Right.
There's a lot of that influence in there. And then there's a big punk rock, at the same time a big fast punk rock influence. Spanglish.
Do you have a name for the record?
I am debating on the name on the record, but I will tell you this. I am debating, or I might just have two names. So one of the names I told Dennis or Robert about was Madison Avenue Blues.
Hmm.
Because, again, it goes with the Madison Avenue influence. I've been thinking about maybe calling it Muerte, which means death in Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
A big awakening of this record was my grandmother's passing away. So it was like a big reawakening of life, and you know, being in your 30s and you know, knowing like, all right, what am I gonna do with my life, like how am I gonna take this, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where it's going right now. So I'm not 100% sure. I mean, like with Rock and Roll Dreams, I knew it was Rock and Roll Dreams before the whole record was recorded, because that's my essence. I'm an immigrant. And all we do is dream and have American dreams, but this is Rock and Roll Dreams. So with this record, it's a little bit different. Like, it's a little bit different. It's more of what's going on right now.
Well, know? it has to be different, right? You don't want to repeat yourself.
I definitely do not want to repeat myself.
Yeah. Well, thank you for talking to us, and good luck with it. And it'll be a Black and White release, it sounds like.
It will be.
Okay. Well, how appropriate.
It will be. It will be a lot of fun.
I'm glad I got to see you at the Songwriter Showcase at the Lamplighter.
That's right. That's
with Harry
right.
and those other guys.
That's right.
I was really looking forward to hearing you play.
That's
and,
right.
And you blew me away. It was great. And you definitely have an individualistic take and a Memphis take.
Thank you.
And it's very important that you're here, and it's very important that you're staying here and contributing something to the fabric of I mean, what we've done, what Memphis did in the 50s, 60s, 70s, it's not over. Everything continues to happen, and voices, you know, are still there. And I appreciate you being here.
Oh, thank you so much, Mike. And also, yeah. You are a badass influence to my music. By your badass movies, it feels like you cater them to me, like in a weird way. Like, it feels like they were made for my type of people, you know.
Well, thanks for coming to Teenage Tupelo.
Oh my God, amazing, amazing. I've already seen it. I want to see it again and again.
Well, you may be in that minority, but we'll see what we can do. All right, thanks, Javi.
Thank you, Mike.
All right, bye-bye.
See ya.
Yo, my.